welcome back to The Wild Podcast with me, your host, Stephanie O'Quigley. If this isn't the first episode that you've listened to, I appreciate the return and I hope that you've been enjoying the podcast so far. This is a chat with my friend Freya, who lives here in New York City. She's a writer for the Daily Mail, the female section, and included in her freelance portfolio, she's also written for Cosmopolitan, Fashionista, Couverture, and a bunch of other Irish publications that you all know and love. We sat in her Nolita apartment in downtown Manhattan, and there was a few sirens and a few motorbikes buzzing in the background, which I hope you don't mind. But I got to chat with Freya about the media landscape and how she built a network coming over to New York from scratch after being a very well advanced writer in Ireland and having to build her portfolio from the very bottom. Freya gave some advice on how to build a network in New York City or Ireland and how to really hold yourself as a freelance writer and build up the portfolio and build up that network that is so important. We also spoke about how social media and social media influencers have possibly impacted her career and possibly will impact her career in the future or not. And we just spoke about being women in New York City and trying to, you know, do the things that we want to do and the struggles that come with it. Enjoy this one. I hope you get something out of it as always, and I will see you at the next one.
Welcome to
my podcast, Freya.
I'm so glad there's no cameras.
I know.
That'll make me really nervous.
That's the next step when your apartment's so beautiful that I was like, I should have brought my camera so we could like Instagram live this. We're in, it's Soho, isn't it?
It's Nolita, so kind of between the Lily, Soho, Chinatown, Lower East Side, everything. I feel like it's just sandwiched in the middle. Yeah, Nolita means north of Lily, so right in the middle.
So for people who don't know, that's like downtown New York, and you'll probably hear sirens and motorbikes and people shouting from the street just because it is so busy. So bear with us, but that kind of adds to the authenticness of the podcast.
Hope we don't have Hell's Angels on the street again. We do that on Sunday mornings.
Roaring engines. But it's a beautiful apartment, no less.
Thank you.
For anyone who doesn't know you, can you tell them a bit about like your background or just like who you are basically in a few lines?
So my name is Freya, as they've probably gathered that by now. And I'm a writer, so I've been in New York almost 4 years. I'm from Dublin, and before I moved here, my main kind of gig was being at the Irish Independent. So I used to do a lot of fashion, beauty, lifestyle stuff for them, for online, and sometimes for print too. And I just really wanted to move to New York because I loved fashion. I wanted to get experience in the industry. Definitely wanted to get, you know, some kind of magazine or website role on my CV, whether I went back or not. Just always had a big draw to go to New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long were you in the Irish Independent for?
I was there about a year and a half. So that was my internship when I was doing journalism in DCU. So you have to do a mandatory 2 month placement at the end of that. So I started in there and then was kept on because I think they were like,
they liked
we
you
could.
So much.
Well, I was very willing to do all the fluff, which was good. And it's funny because in journalism, they always told me, you know, you're never going to have work because you don't want to like write about news, hard news. I just was always more interested in like the storytelling and the creativity as opposed to like straight up journalism reporting. So they were like, you know, you have to start doing more than just this like quote unquote fluff. But when I went into the Independent, they had like no shortage of people doing news, and they kind of liked that I would think outside the box. I was also so willing. Like when I first went in, the lifestyle editor at the time came up to me and was saying, I just saw this thing where if you don't wash your hair for like 2 months, it eventually starts to clean itself, and I want you to do that.
Oh, Jesus.
And I was like, okay. Like, you know, I was still on the internship. I was like, okay, I've got to do this. And then she never really said it again for the next week. And
you were coming in with dirty hair.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, I kind of like to exercise and stuff. Like, this might be an issue if I can't wash my hair. but was just so willing to kind of
get down and dirty.
Yeah, yeah, and well, not necessarily get down and dirty with my hair, but like get down and dirty and get the job. Because like, as you know, in Ireland the media, it is small. So if you've got an opportunity like that, I was, you know, I went in guns blazing and I wanted to get the job at the end of it. I very much felt throughout college, I wanted to work. You know, I felt like I'm not learning really anything, especially by final year in journalism is very, very much based on your portfolio. So I wanted to work. I wanted to like put what I had learned to kind of apply that to a role. And so anyway, she eventually was like, you know what, the Daily Mail have done it, which is like kind of ironic. So I don't need to do it anymore. And that woman is now my editor at Lonely Planet.
Okay.
So it's like, I guess she always saw that I was like really willing to do stuff.
Okay.
So it does, I guess it's important to, you know, just say yes to everything that comes your way.
So you were in there and you kind of had that willingness about you and you were kind of ready to kind of do things that maybe other people would have questioned.
Yeah.
And that was just the way that you're...
Yeah, and I think as well, the younger generation of people who go into journalism, you've seen those kind of movies, you've seen, you know, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And stuff.
Yeah.
And you're like, I want to be the how-to girl. You know, that kind of stuff. You're more willing to think outside the box, put yourself kind of into the story in some ways, try things out and then write about your experience. And that's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to just... I actually had to go to a court for one of my assignments somewhere along the way. And I did really badly on the assignment. My mom was like, what did you do? Like, did you write about a suit in the first paragraph? And I was like, yeah. She's like, Freya, that's like absolutely not what you're going to read in a newspaper. But I wanted to have like, I wanted to do features and I wanted to do things that had like color and that were interesting to read. I didn't want to be like, man stands in dock accused of whatever. I was like, and he was in this navy suit and blah, blah.
Yeah,
so I
more
just,
descriptive and creative. Yeah. And that's how I met you, I think, was because you were writing about Marissa Carter when I worked for at the time.
Yeah, it must be.
That
yeah.
was like how I first like started to get to know who you were.
Yeah, and there was so much opportunity at The Independent. Like their online was a beast even at the time. I'm sure it's even more like crazy now in terms of their reach, but because it was kind of translating that print identity onto the web, there was a lot of scope to just do like fun pieces and interview. And I used to do this thing, even like, you know, 10 Irish girls to follow that have cool style on Instagram, and no one was really doing that at the time in Ireland, which sounds crazy now because you look at all the sites that, you know, they're getting all of their stories off Instagram.
Yeah.
But no one was really doing that, and I guess couple that with the fact that The Indo had such a good reach, that it was great to just, you know, be able to like flex my muscles across a lot of different kind of types of content and see what worked for them. And I always think I learned a lot about what people want to read, and like ultimately people are nosy.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of it
Do you think that's just Irish people though?
To a certain extent, I think Irish people are they're definitely more interested in like what the girl down the street is doing, you know, that kind of stuff. Whereas here, I think it's more about like the aspirational, like what is the girl down the street who looks like a supermodel, or what is the girl down the street who is a venture capitalist? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
I think they're more interested like if they can get something out of that, as opposed to just like maybe hearing someone's story, some like regular Joe or Jane. I think
so. Nosiness.
Yeah. And I'm the nosiest person ever, and I always wonder, am I nosy because I'm a journalist,
like,
or am I journalist because I'm nosy?
Oh really?
Yeah. Chicken or the egg?
I mean being a journalist and being nosy really just goes hand in hand.
I think you have to have a huge amount of curiosity, and I've learned that particularly recently, trying to like maintain a kind of full-time freelance career, is you have to think of everything as a story. And you know, if you're seeing things two or three times, like you have to think, okay, is that a trend? If you're hearing multiple people talk about something, okay, well there's got to be a wider audience for this. So definitely I think being curious will help a lot if you want to be a writer.
So you're sitting in The Independent, you're there a year and a half. At what point do you make, how do you come to make the decision, or even get into your head that you want to move to New York? Like, how does that opportunity come about?
I
and what age are you at that time?
I was how old am I? I sometimes I think I'm still that age that I was when I left. Yeah. I think New York's like Benjamin Button years or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm still 23. Yeah, I was about 23. I think I went in at 22. So I was a little bit older leaving college because I didn't know what I wanted to do. Was really, really interested in fashion. I have a very creative house. My mom is in art and my dad is in tech, but also like really into music. Mm-hmm. So I did think I wanted to be a fashion designer, but was just like technically very untalented.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved English. English was always my favorite subject, would read a lot. But somewhere along the way, no one kind of thought to say, oh, you like English and you like fashion. Like, why don't you kind of like fuse those things together? So I decided I was going to do law.
Okay.
Yeah, which was, I don't know, my dad's like, she watched Legally Blonde once and just, you know, based everything on that. So I went into college and I did law and I just...
In Dublin?
Yeah, in DC as well. So I was in there the first day and I just was like, you have made a terrible mistake. Like, what have you done? But I'm very stubborn, so I was like, no, it'll be fine. Like, you can do this. You got the points to do it. Everything is fine. So I stayed in there for the year. I was working like a lot outside of college because I knew I wanted to do a summer abroad.
Yeah.
And I went and I did the summer abroad and kind of lived on my own for the first time. I went to Vancouver with a bunch of friends who are still like my best friends. We were 19 and I kind of just thought, what are you doing? Like, you can't go back and do something that you hate.
Mm.
So I went back to Dublin and went back to law and did about 3 weeks and told my parents like, I can't do this anymore, and they were just like, well, that's tough because you're in it now, so mm-hmm. you have to, and you could do a master's in journalism or you can do a night course, but you can't just stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then being stubborn, I just went in and like withdrew.
Okay.
So luckily day. Yeah, so luckily I think, as I said, it's about the third week, so you could transfer
mm-hmm.
Back within that kind of first month. So I went and I started journalism, which is where I met Claudia, who you know from Coco Brown, and I then decided, okay, I'm really going to apply myself mm-hmm. outside of the like lecture room, because I didn't really gel with DCU doing law, and I really wanted to like make sure, okay, you're here for another 3 years, like put your all into it. So that's when I got involved with a lot of stuff outside of like my lectures. So I was the editor of the fashion magazine and I was the lifestyle editor of the paper, and then I used to style the fashion shows, and I put my hand up in this like meeting and basically said, oh, I'll do like the first style blog in DCU. Mm-hmm. So I set that up, and that just always then made me go, okay, like, you want to be in fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And like in 2000, so I guess it's like 2011, like there wasn't really a lot, like blogs were exploding
mm-hmm.
in the US,
mm-hmm.
But not at home. And I was just like, everything is coming out of New York, like all these really cool things, like Man Repeller was a thing even at the time, like just her personal style blog. So I knew that like if I really wanted to like immerse myself in that kind of world of fashion and stuff, it was gonna have to be outside. But I do think all of that stuff, and then I was in the Style Society in DC as well. I was the chairperson of that for my last year, and that is definitely what got me into the Independent, because I had like, you know, just put a lot of energy and focus into doing all that. And I used to write a ton for, I don't think they're even there anymore. Fashion.ie is definitely not there. But I did about 100 articles for them by the time I was in final year. And I did...
Fashion.ie was just a standalone website.
Yeah. Great domain name. Like Fashion.ie.
Yeah. They probably just sent up selling that and make more money.
Yeah, they paid me. And I was just like the happiest person in the world. And like that definitely gave me a lot of experience in writing about fashion and not writing, you know, the real cliche stuff that I was maybe seeing in other places. And I used to write for Darren Kendi's Help My Style, which mm-hmm. I don't think is there either anymore.
No, I remember that though.
So I used to have like a little column there as well. So I knew then, you know, after a year and a half in the Independent, I was like, okay, I feel like I could stay here for life. Like, this is a great job. I had access to do kind of whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
And they were very, very willing to take my ideas on.
Yeah.
In terms of pitches every day and stuff. But it was kind of crunch time. And then the grad visa was coming to that close of that year since I'd finished college. And to be honest, there was never really a doubt in my mind that I wouldn't go to New York. I knew I was going to go. And my parents never even were like, well, I think actually they were like, you know, you've got a pensionable job here and stuff, should you stay in the Independent? But I was gone. Like, I even had a boyfriend at the time. I was like, bye, I have to go. Like, New York is calling. It's always been calling. And yeah, just didn't really look back. And yeah. I knew in my heart that it wasn't going to be a year.
Mm.
There was not a hope. I was just doing a year.
Mm.
I was like, it's either 5 years or it's till I'm 30 or it's forever. I just really wanted to get here.
Yeah, I think though when you move to New York like that on a grad visa, you think that a year is a long time.
I didn't. Okay. I was like, I'm going.
I had 18 months for my first visa. And yeah. I was like, 18 months, like, mm-hmm. that's forever. Like, yeah. And it was just went in the blink of an eye, and it's literally, in a year you just get a taste.
I think in a year, like, you don't even know. I mean, that this being said, I don't know my way around the subway entirely now. But that's more to my directions than anything else. But in a year, like, you really don't even know every area
mm-hmm.
in Manhattan alone. Like, there's just way too much to get done in a year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And even as we were just saying, like, earlier, just chatting the two of us, your experience doesn't always necessarily translate.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to really take that on board when you're moving here. You have to be very humble.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be willing to do everything. And you're going to have to start at the bottom.
Yeah.
Unless you're very, very lucky, you will have to do things that you might think are like, oh, I could have done this like 3 years ago or something. You
yeah.
probably have to intern to get a foot in the door. So like, you really don't get a chance to kind of have any kind of a career trajectory in a year.
Yeah.
If you do, that's great. And I know lots of people who came for the year and saw it just as a year opportunity and were happy to go back. But I even if I had to go home tomorrow, like, I couldn't see myself doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And
so
that's 4 years in.
You're here 4 years. So how did that transition from going kind of, I suppose, to a position, you put yourself in a position in Ireland where you were in a very good spot in terms of your young career as a
yeah.
journalist.
Mm-hmm.
You had your fingers in a lot of pies, and then you come over to a city like New York, which is an international city. There's so
yeah.
many people like here that come for the same thing. People are all hungry for a career. And there's loads of journalists and editors here
yeah.
wanting to do the same thing as you that might have twice the amount of experience you have. How did it feel, or how did you cope with starting at the bottom of the ladder, you know, taking a step
yeah.
back and having to come down a few steps, you know, from
Absolutely.
Where you were in Ireland?
I think, again,
or
I
did
was
that even
just,
happen,
oh,
you know?
That happened, like, even now, you know, I feel like the Indo was a great job to have, and I still think I really did, you know, kind of take a nosedive
yeah.
from that platform.
And I know that you're not the only one. For
yeah, you know,
in terms of
at
career.
The end of the day, like, you're coming here and you are competing with people who have either, like, an incredibly prestigious university on their resume, or they've got internships at all, like, the quote-unquote, like, best cool places.
Yeah.
And you're coming over here and you are, like, a total, like, bumpkin. Being like, well, I worked at the Irish Independent, like, people don't really care
yeah.
at all. No one has ever asked me about my Irish experience in any interview here. So
yeah, I actually would say the same.
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
because it's like, people know Ireland, obviously,
yeah,
but
they don't
know the scale of what's the Irish Independent versus Image versus, you know, a blog. They
yeah.
really don't know.
Yeah.
So I definitely, because I was so eager to get here, I was willing to do whatever it took.
Mm-hmm.
I started waitressing here like my first week.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great because it just gave me like a very good bottom line to, you know, get by on in terms of money. And that gave me a lot of kind of wiggle room to then
mm-hmm.
apply myself to like internship applications or whatever. So
for anyone who doesn't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like waitressing and bartending in New York City is more lucrative than people think.
Oh, I made more money when I was 23 waitressing than
yeah.
I probably will in like 5 years time. And it's
yeah.
cash. Like
yeah.
I was only saying this yesterday when
I'm just throwing this in there,
yeah.
but it's true.
When
fun fact about New York, you make a lot of money waitressing.
Yeah, a lot of money. Especially Irish girls, because we're good servers
mm.
and we're like very like personable, we're chatting to the we're like talking the ears off people, like they love it, they're just
yeah.
like throwing money at you
yeah.
in a like above board way.
And Freya's tip is to get into a really prestigious New York, like
go with like an institution of a
restaurant
where like people are, their checks are big, like they're drinking martinis at lunchtime. I loved it, and
she
I learned
smart about them.
Yeah, I learned so much about people in that job.
Yeah,
and how to talk to people that I had nothing in common with.
Yeah.
I think that is very important for, you know, future interviewing skills as well. Like, And the hours were long, like the work was like very physical and demanding. It was a steakhouse, I should say. Four people were like, what was she doing? It was physical and demanding. So, you know, like there was no, this is a girl's job, this is a guy's job. It was just like work, work yourself to the bone.
Yeah.
So that was great because I wasn't concerned about money.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously like such an expensive place.
Yeah.
And then I got an opportunity to work with Made Fashion Week, which is an IMG company under the New York Fashion Week kind of family.
Yeah.
So that's where a lot of the kind of up and coming designers, and even in the 3 years since I've been there now, like those designers are a lot of the big ones on the schedule. So it was a really, really amazing opportunity to work for Made, and I worked at about 30 shows, I think, my first New York Fashion Week.
Are you joking?
Yeah.
Oh,
and we
God,
lived also, we lived in Riverdale, which is North Bronx, like kind of parallel to Woodlawn.
I did two fashion shows.
Yeah.
Or two New York Fashion Week shows, and you like, you have to get up. I got up at 4 a.m. had to be, call time was 4:30 or 5.
Yeah, it's early, and like we lived, so this was February and it was snowing.
Yeah,
and
it's like, yeah.
In Riverdale, so I think, and then a lot of the shows that I was doing were in Milk Studios in Chelsea, and we had to be there for whatever time, and it was an hour and a half to get from Riverdale down in the snow. It was just crazy, but yeah, that was
that's what you have to do.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, everything I'd ever wanted was to like see New York Fashion Week, let alone be at 30 shows and like be interviewing like front row celebrities and all that kind of stuff.
I feel like you need like a prescription for antibiotics after that.
Yeah, I can't even remember. But I was also, you know, I was 23, so I was also like a lot more probably sprightly and energetic then.
Yeah.
Before New York had like worn me down and aged me. And then, so they had signed my USIP papers, so I was in their office then, which was great because I was like, hey, you know, like I can write, like that's what I do. And they're like, okay, cool, like you can just write, you know, for our website and like do all that. So I was there unpaid, obviously, working in the steakhouse, and then working
which
there.
Is not actually obviously, because people don't realize
that. Oh yeah,
people,
I mean,
take on those jobs
for sure. Yeah. I'm like, obviously I was unpaid because sometimes I still get like shafted for money now, but that's
like,
just,
it's lucky to get paid.
Yeah, that's
for work.
The double-edged sword of like working in anything creative in New York.
So they signed your grad visa papers.
They signed my
basically.
Grad visa papers, yeah. And then I did the September Fashion Week with them too. So this was all 2016. And again, worked at about 30 shows then. And so when I say working, like it was, I was a social media assistant. So it was a lot of like, just, you know, making sure it came across cool to people who were following at home.
And tell the story.
Because Made, like, I definitely wasn't cool enough for it. Made is, like, a really kind of out there, like, hip. Even saying hip, I sound too not cool for it. Made is all about, like, the creators and the tribe and whatever. But it was an incredible experience to get. Even just to see, like, the people and the clothes and everything up close. Like, it was everything I'd wanted. And then from there, because I had all that experience kind of on my resume, I got a job at an app called Heed. And that was, for a brief time, the New York Fashion Week app. So there was a merger between what was called Heed, an Israeli company, and then a lot of the IMG properties, so New York Fashion Week and whatever. So I was in there paid, which was like unbelievable for me. Because I did get a stipend for Fashion Week, but all the hours I had done in the office were unpaid, which is why the steakhouse came in so handy. So from September onwards, I was at Heed, and then I eventually became the editor-in-chief there. So I went from editorial assistant to the editor of the app, and it was amazing. It was a startup. I worked with the nicest people. Like, I loved them. I'm still quite close to some of them. And we just worked so hard to, like, produce this app that we thought was incredible. Like, you could do all these really cool things on it. Like, you could take a photo and like recognize your mood, and you could like search images by tags, which no one else was doing at the time. So you could say like, oh, I saw, you know, Kalotz on the runway, where did I see that? And you would search Kalotz, and it would bring up like all the different shows that had that. So that's obviously a huge amount of work, like manually tagging every single item in hundreds of thousands of runway images and street style images. And it had like that kind of Shazam for fashion that everyone is still trying to do. You know, no, I don't think anyone will ever get it.
Like, yeah, I feel like
fashion,
that hasn't been done well.
Yeah,
like,
fashion's
like,
too nuanced. Like, a computer cannot really recognize what a human eye can yet in terms of like what a garment actually is. It just sees color or pattern. It doesn't see like, you know, the fabric or anything. So we were all there, and then like I just ran out of money, I guess. And so that ended, and I was made redundant, and that was like very, very difficult because I feel like I peaked at 24 and I had everything I wanted.
Was this still in your graduate visa whole thing?
No, this is so then I...
So this you're gone out your graduate visa, you're in your next stage, and you're...
Exactly.
You had... You were in heed, and then kind of... Okay.
Yeah, so it... like the plug was pulled on it or whatever, and that was very, very difficult to go, oh, like I had everything I wanted at 24 and... I knew that I had done the right thing by moving here, and then like I've been made redundant, like what am I gonna do? So I went back to waitressing, making my cash, and kind of got like just went about applying for everything, and that was like the first time I kind of experienced how grueling the New York job hunt is.
It is.
I started freelancing for a couple of places, but like not in any way enough to like keep me going. And did a lot of stuff for free around that time, just because I had no recent clips, because obviously all the stuff I had done before in Ireland, I didn't really feel comfortable like using that as, so this is what I can do.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of stuff for free, and even the stuff that people ask me now, like where have you written for it? And I say these places, I'm like in my head thinking, I did those for free, you know? So yeah, I felt at that stage, what am I gonna do in New York? Like I was very kind of disillusioned by media and fashion and stuff. So that around then is kind of when I decided to go to LA for like a much needed breather.
Okay. So this is just a vacation to LA?
So, well, yeah, actually, first off, I had just met this guy, and it was Thanksgiving. He's like, why don't we go to LA to visit one of the girls who I had moved here with?
Who was this crazy man?
And I was like, yes, let's go to LA. This sounds fun.
You're like, I'm just as crazy. Let's go. So yeah. You guys went, so...
We weren't even going out. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah, it was like...
Who do you go to... Who goes to LA with a guy you're not even going out with?
I mean, I knew he was normal. Like, I hadn't met him. But...
Is he normal though?
He's gonna listen to this and kill me. So we went to LA, and it was a heat wave at Thanksgiving, and we were just like, whoa, what are we doing in New York? It was a really, really tough winter that year, like both for me and my career, and in terms of the weather, it was like very, very intense. Around that time of year, we went to LA, like stunning weather. We were doing hikes up Runyon, like just doing all the LA things. And it came to the last day. I was there for about a week, and I was like, I just don't want to go back. I don't want to go back to New York, which I kind of become like, it was almost Stockholm syndrome. That I was like, New York is great. New York is great. Everything is wonderful. I'm so happy I moved here.
Yeah, but New York just beats you with a stick every day.
So, yeah, when it does, it really does. And you know, I kind of thought for the first time, maybe I should like try something else. So. Anyway, we went back, the two of us. We were going out by the end of the trip.
That's a long date.
So, yeah.
That was like, hey, do you want to go on a date to LA?
Oh,
like, first
I know.
Date.
Two lunatics. So, we went back to New York and kind of started thinking about it more.
Was it like a massive come down? Was it just like...
Well, yeah, it was like... So, I actually went home and he went to, like, Canada or something to, like, continue his vacation. And I went back, like, straight into the restaurant. I was living in Bushwick at this stage, just not really... I don't know, I feel like I didn't have proper roots in New York at this stage because I was just trying to convince myself that everything was great. And my parents were like, you can come home. You know, like, also kind of praying into that little bit of doubt I had. And honestly, we were just like, let's go to LA. Let's just see how it goes. So
this is 2000 and...
This is 2017.
Okay.
Yeah. So everyone's like, wait, you've been together for like 6 weeks and you're moving across the country?
Right.
But we both were like, you know what, we're adults. Like, why not just go see how it is?
You were together for 6 weeks?
About that, yeah. Yeah, so like our trip was in November.
And you were living in Bushwick at the time.
I was in Bushwick and he was elsewhere, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, yeah, let's just do it.
Yeah.
I am like quite a free spirit in that way.
So that's when you left the job in the steakhouse.
That's when I left. And I kind of, it's like, totally golden handcuffs when you have a great server job here. The money is so good that it does kind of get its claws into you.
Yeah.
And it is a really good safety net, but it also can then, it just takes up a lot of your time.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have the time I needed to write and like build up a portfolio again. And around this time I kind of got I didn't have a contract or anything, but like an opportunity to work with a publishing company that was half based in New York and half based in Ireland.
Yeah.
So I knew like I would have that bottom line to keep me going, and I would see what else was in LA, and I would just like write and everything would be great and I would get a tan and all that. So LA was great in so many ways, and I definitely feel like I built up my portfolio a huge amount. And because I had gotten again to kind of just write, like being in LA, I instantly was like, okay, I need to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the things that I ever had in my head that I wanted to do, they're all based here.
Mm-hmm.
Like LA is great if you're in entertainment or, I mean, if you're in lots of industries, LA is great, but for fashion and media, it's not the epicenter of the industry like here is in so many ways. So I had been interviewing for a company in February, and I had literally flown to do the interview. I had a New York resume or a New York address on my resume. And I was like, yeah, I'll be there in like, you know, an hour.
Yeah. Just
booking
me like
flight.
6 hours.
Yeah.
There.
And it was like very much at the time, I thought it was my dream job. It was like a copywriting role at like a huge all-American fashion brand. And I, again, had like been really ballsy and reached out to Fashionista and was like, listen, I don't have any recent clips from the last fashion week, but I have like 200 things that I did at the app, like show summaries. And I was like, I really just want an opportunity to write again and like go to fashion week and, you know, like critique it and talk about it and everything. And they were like, well, look, we kind of have New York fashion week sorted in house. And I was like, oh, well, funny thing, like I'm going to be in London. I was not going to be in London in any way.
Oh my God, I love your
style.
But
I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
And one of my like best friends lived in London, who ironically now lives with me, in that room. So he was in London and he was like, absolutely, come stay with me. I'm very lucky that a family friend has me on her buddy pass.
Uh-huh.
So I knew like it wouldn't cost me the world getting to London, because I could fly through Dublin and like see my family and then just go to London on a cheap flight, like credit card miles or whatever, for the weekend. And like that was insane, because like Fashionista is a big brand, so I got to go to like Victoria Beckham show, the Alexa Chung show, the Erdem show.
I
was like, this is it, like I'm not letting this go now. At least it's not a motorbike.
I don't know what that is. Some
there's
automobile.
Always a noise. You should see this place on Thursday nights. It's like the party's just on the street. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
Is Thursday night like the going out?
Thursday night is loose on the street for some reason. I don't know. I think it's there's a lot of late night food spots.
Oh.
So it's not even the bars. It's like the falafel places hopping.
Oh wow.
So anyway, yeah, I was interviewing for this job that was in New York and then had like gone to London and then come back and interviewed a second time. But I was like, this is it, this is it, it's happening again. The brand was like one that I'm really, really passionate about and that I love. And then we moved back and it was just like suddenly like very cool with them. And I had an edit test. I had a third interview, I had an edit test, and then I had a phone interview and they were like, okay, great, like we just need approval on your salary. And then like it never came to fruition. And like then that kind of made me realize as well, like you should never put all of, like you should never tie all your value as a person to like a title.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I was so gutted, and it was a big move, like to come back from LA in a rush.
So you moved from LA,
moved back
to New York, basically because you were like just about to get this job.
That and so as I said, it was always kind of like,
or it was it kind was of a, open your mind to like,
for sure,
holy,
yeah.
Holy, like I can possibly get.
Yeah.
Like a
it
job
definitely
like
put the foot on the gas in a lot of ways. I knew that I wanted to come back to New York, and I said I was at Fashion Week in London, and it just was like, this is it, like I have to, this is what I love to do, and I want to be doing this, and I am not doing this in LA. And at the start of the year I'd kind of made a decision as well that I was very burnt out for doing a lot of stuff for Irish publications. And I was like, you know, just think about why you're here, like you're here, you want to be in New York, you want to be in like fashion and lifestyle and whatever, like that needs to be your priority. So I had like all those goals in mind, and then when that job were like, okay great, like let's get this started, we did rush back.
Yeah.
And then, as I
and
said,
and then it
like,
fell through.
If yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm like, did he die?
Yeah, I mean, that's
I never heard
to
from
me.
Him again.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is just so insane. But that, like, I was very kind of worked up at that stage because I just wanted to work. Yeah. Like, I've always just wanted to
work. You wanted your kind of big break.
Yeah.
To kind of,
I felt like I really deserved it. Like, I'd been doing. It was such a hard slog for those years before, and like I never stopped writing, I never stopped pitching. I just wanted it, like capital I, capital T, like just something.
Yeah,
you know. So then at that stage, I was like, oh my god, I need a job, and I had totally taken my eye off the ball in terms of a job search because that process had been going so well, and I did have a lot of freelance stuff keeping me busy, and I had like a lot of press trips this year as well, so I was kind of just like always on the go. And I eventually just, there was about 2 or 3 weeks where I met like everybody I knew for coffee. And like, I may as well have had like one of those clacks and things. I was like, I need a job. Like, you know, I don't want to be freelance anymore.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like one of those coffees, the girl that I met was like, give me your resume. I'll send it to the editor upstairs. And then they called me in and they gave me the job on the spot at the Daily Mail, and I was like, yes, I like your style, instead of these like 10 interviews.
You're like, finally.
I was like, oh my god, you're like, you're exactly what I want.
Yeah.
An editor, just like, okay, when can you start?
Yeah.
So I've been at the Daily Mail now for, I think it's only like 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And I am in a freelance capacity for them, which is perfect because I definitely want to be able to still like continue to write for lots of different places. I have
so like you're freelance but you're not freelance.
I'm freelance yes, in terms of that I have the luxury of being able to write for other places, and I'm freelance in terms of like I'm paid a day rate, so like one of the girls in the office has like, if you're freelance with them, you kind of start and end your day, end your contract every day.
Yeah,
which is a nice way to look at it because there's still so much I want to do in New York and in the industry. And like, it is, I won't lie, like it's been a really long 2 or 3 months since I've been with them, because I still freelance like every evening when I come home, and I still freelance like on the weekends, so to try and get everything in can be very hard. And like, I'm freelancing but I'm also like still thinking of what I want to be pitching, what I want to be doing.
So you're working full time in the in the Daily Mail, which is, you know, like a really big goal for some people or some journalists, and you know, I've had questions about Irish girls coming over here working in fashion and, and basically doing what you've done, and like, you've really described how difficult it has been, or just how tedious and how ongoing and how long the process is, and how much you kind of have to fight for it. And you know, not to say that you didn't have success along the way, but those peaks come with many lows or long time in between, and that's just the reality of it, which is interesting. Your job at the Daily Mail is kind of the first time that you've really just like, well, you're not even relaxed because you're still doing freelance.
Oh no, I'm like wound up like a clockwork toy at the moment.
Yeah,
like it's insane. It is like, I do have a lot on my plate because I didn't really give up much of my freelance stuff when I started, and I work, you know, like a 40-hour week at the Daily Mail.
Which is just like,
I mean, that even feels like not that much for New York, but
I don't think it is.
Yeah, that's like, they're, because I'm freelance, they're like, get out of here. You know, they don't want me to go over my hours.
Yeah,
so I
when you're working in New York, you're always going to have your plate full, though, I think.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You didn't come back from your sweet, like, quiet life in LA to come to New York and then and replicate that. You came back knowing what you were getting yourself into.
Yeah, and I had, like, worked so hard to get a lot of the freelance opportunities that I had. And, like, I do genuinely love doing them.
Yeah.
So when I got that job, because, like, ultimately I just wanted a job to have, like, a reliable paycheck, you know. And also I felt very much, not burnt out, but I felt like I was at a turning point with being freelance. It's like, well, there's no real like trajectory as a freelance writer. You know what I mean? Like, you're not gonna get promoted. And all I ever was working towards was writing for places that I loved, and like writing about, you know, content that I loved, or writing about topics that I loved. But I very much felt like it's now or never. Like, I need to get back in a job because like I want a title, and I want, like, you know,
Somewhere to go every day and like have that,
that
kind
was a
of,
big
like,
part of it
job
too.
Life.
Yeah, like, you know, it's so lonely being... lonely being a writer, but it's also lonely being a freelance writer from like your kitchen table. So I definitely was like craving some kind of structure, but the only things I gave up were things that maybe weren't like furthering me, so like ghostwriting, I gave up the things that I was just doing like to have to be able to charge a rate for them, and like more, I guess, stuff that I was just like, I'll do it because I know it's paid, but I like, it wasn't instilling any passion, so I like really didn't give up a lot when I started the Daily Mail, so like therefore I kind of, I like, I'm going to bed in the night just like, I'm seeing spots because I've just been staring at a screen for like 14 hours, but I know ultimately like that's just what I have to do now. And in some ways, as I said, I feel like I'm 23, and I'm just like, okay, work as hard as you can now so it pays off. And it is, I do like the ability to be able to write from multiple places at once. So
So how do you feel like the media landscape, because social media, like going from, you've been a writer for so long and been, you know, a journalist for so long, and have done the smaller jobs, the bigger jobs, have seen the industry change. How do you feel like how social media and like just online content, because we both work in it, in you know, I'm online content is very much, plays a huge part in my job. How do you feel about the way the industry is structured now, and I suppose the attention people have, the masses have, on content online and what that looks like, and your role as a journalist?
I do think that social media isn't affecting media as much now as it maybe did a couple of years ago.
When you say a couple of years, do you mean 2017, 2018?
I mean even... like,
or when social media was 16, emerging.
17. Yeah, I guess it depends on the industry, right? But fashion in particular, if we're going to like use that as an example, I think like we've seen... the rise of maybe more influential people in media, like they have used social media really well, and it actually kind of is helping like the publications that they work for. I don't think people in the industry feel as threatened anymore by social media, and I don't think that writers necessarily feel as threatened anymore. Obviously when it first came up, everyone was like, that's it, like we're out of business, but at the end of the day, like there's only so much content you can get off social media. You know what I mean? Like, the websites that do really, really great journalism or really good, like, long-read features, they're still thriving because, like, at the end of the day, a caption is such a small, like, you know, amount of words. And I think where other industries are probably feeling threatened by social media, like, you can't really replicate the journalism on Instagram. You know what I mean? And it's so... that is all very visual. And I do think, like, I find it's great for me because I get a lot of stories. And it is a way to, like, you know, peer into, like, what's happening in the world. Somewhat of a narrow view because you're only kind of seeing, you know, what you follow and stuff. But I think that...
it just doesn't have the bulk or the kind of...
no.
The weight that journalism has.
Yeah, I don't think it's, like, helped my career in any way. And I wouldn't really see it as something that like furthers what I do.
Okay, and would you say the same thing for social media influencers? Because like, say as a brand, coming from the brand side of things, like as a brand, would we pay a social media influencer $20,000 to do X, Y, and Z versus paid thecut.com or fashionista.com $20,000 to do like sponsor content and a side banner and whatever integration that we can.
For sure.
Do you see that as, because the ad, the spend on your advertisers, which are the brands, is really upholding and paying your paycheck. You know, and that's upholding websites that we, you know, that you have worked for.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm seeing like more of a rise in brands looking for not like a social media influencer, but someone who's just like, going back to that average Jane, but like who has a cool job or has a cool story, and they're using her as kind of like the mouthpiece. I think like social media influencers, that is very threatening to someone who like their job is competing with them. I think we like hold social media influencers to such like, they're held so accountable. But, like, these people don't have a degree in journalism, likely. So like, you know, very soon, like, we're seeing this fallout between, well, they're just saying everything is good, like, and what they're getting paid to say is mm-hmm. good. Like, they don't really have, I guess, the ethics that a journalist would have, or, you know, like, they're very commercially motivated. So I think, yeah, like, you're seeing branded content is definitely going to be how, like, established news outlets are going to keep mm-hmm. going, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be based on what a social media influencer, like, can bring.
Yeah, so you're saying, what you're saying is that they're basically just different content, like, they're different outlets, like, your journalist approach. Because what I want to talk about is this story that you wrote for cosmopolitan.com just recently, which is just so cool to see, like, an Irish girl writing such, like, your, what was the title of it?
It was, oh my god, I can't remember. It was, so the whole thing is about Visco Girls, but I can't remember what title they had on it. I think
it was basically saying that,
because,
like,
I think they changed it from what I had submitted.
Oh, great.
It was like, it's basically along the lines of, like, the Visco Girl is the new basic bitch, can't we just let women live?
Yes,
I think maybe
that was,
it is
what it
somewhat
was.
The same title.
So like, you in that were basically saying, stop, people need to stop, like, mm-hmm. trashing basic, what I'm saying in quotations is basic bitches. And it's, you wrote, just when you thought it was safe to slip into your favorite pair of Lululemons and sip rosé all day without being labeled a basic bitch, the internet has decided to come for social media using females once again.
Yeah.
Meaning that, like, social media is, like, targeting, like, females, and, like, if you're wearing, like, Birkenstocks and a linen dress,
you're automatically in another category.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, like, social media, it's all based on, like, the visuals and the aesthetic, and I think that is, we're already seeing, like, a shift away from that, and I've noticed a huge amount. And, like, Gen Z social media users, they've seen that, like, extreme of, like, overly filtered, like, perfect images. You're seeing, you know, what the 1% of the world are doing, you know, and it's so far away from, like, what you can access, that, like, there's already a shift away from that.
Yeah,
so I think, like, social media influencing, it will definitely stay, but I can't say for sure that it's going to stay as it is now. There'll definitely be a ton of other platforms that mm-hmm. are going to come up. So I think it's definitely still around, and it's still going to be around, and it does, like, stand at a parallel with media and journalism and stuff. But, you know, those people, like, they're going to change as mm-hmm. well. And, like, eventually people get tired of seeing the same stuff. So that's what I mean when I say I don't feel that threatened by it, because they're not writers and they're not really able to tell a long form mm-hmm. story. I mean, that's a total generalization. Some of them, you know, there's
but
a lot of editors who are influencers.
And they're not set it, they're not either setting out to do that. Like, the girls who are taking photos mm-hmm. on, like, you know, the coast of wherever, like, you know, with their blue flowing dress, like, they're not out to set right the stories that you have. They have different intentions.
For sure. And, like, it all, we get tired with everything, like, as, like, a whole kind of population. Like, you do only want to see as much stuff before feeling, like, jaded by mm-hmm. it, you know. And I think that's the problem with social media, is that people are, like, tying their value to what, like, just their images,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, like, those women are going to get older, and men, like, they're going to get older, they probably won't even, like, identify with their own stuff that they put out. So I think, like, only focusing on social media as your only, like, quote-unquote kind of career definitely limits you a lot. I think, like, everyone should be kind of exploring lots of different avenues, because this is, there's things like TikTok and Discord and all those other, you know, apps that these, like, children, these teenagers are using, and, like, they have more control over who is going to be a quote-unquote influencer,
because
they're not stupid. Like, they've grown up with this,
mm-hmm.
they know it's, like, I'm not gonna say vacuous, because that, like, undermines what people do, but they know to take it with a grain of salt. Whereas we're the first kind of generation to
take it
to have our peers, like, literally being this person who everyone is looking to for, you know, ideas and inspiration.
Yeah,
I think the generation below us, because they have grown up, like, so exposed to this as, like, a career and as a business, I don't think they're as swayed by influencers. I think they're much quicker to make up their own mind and
mm-hmm.
to kind of see it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why people are, like, seeing a shift away from this very, like, hyper-produced, overly filtered, like, everything is wonderful. Like, younger users are a bit more, like, they're just using it to express themselves in like these quick videos, as you see on TikTok or something. It's not about like, look at me and how fabulous it is. If anything, it's more like taking the piss out of themselves in a lot of ways. So it's interesting. I do think like it's a real pivotal time for social media influencers right now, because it's just, it's very saturated. So yeah. I think the ones, people are going to have to start going, okay, what else do I have to use like as another string to my bow, you know?
It's crazy.
There's so many of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Even that shite blogger say, I followed that on Instagram the other day. I was like, who are all these people? You know?
Yeah.
Like, there's always a time when everyone decides they're going to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's, you know, everyone wanted to be an assets model growing up.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Like everyone wanted
era.
To be. Yeah.
Oh my god, like, oh, she's an assets model. Like, yeah, that
you know,
was like the thing.
And that was like great to be the girl who was like, you know,
doing
making
the
it. And they were,
yeah,
they were like a hostess at Crystal and they were in the bikini on Grafton Street, like promoting an insurance.
Doing the phone calls. Yeah.
And, you know, everyone does go, I want to do that. Like, I want to be like her. And now it's a social media thing. And I think at the end of the day, like, don't put all your value in, like, how you look and like what you're like online. And even if it's not tied to how you look, but it's like you're really controlling what people think of you.
Yeah.
Or sorry, you're not controlling what people think of you, and you're really just putting a very narrow like view of yourself online.
Yeah.
So I just think that it's maybe time to question that a little bit more. And is it really serving you in the long run for what you want to do?
Yeah, is it sustainable?
Yeah. And is it like, is it what you want to be remembered by?
Yeah.
And I like, this is really morbid, but because I have always been like doing a little bit of news here and there, there's been a ton of people I've had to do stories about when they die. And do you want to be remembered like by your last Instagram post? Like there was one girl I did and her VSCO was public and there was all these like racy.
I don't even know what VSCO is. I thought VSCO was an editing app.
It's an editing app, but like again, it's its own social media thing now. So this is what all the kids are doing. Like they're already moving away from Instagram.
Okay.
And this girl's VSCO was public and she had all these kind of like racy photos in her underwear. And I was like, oh my god, that's the last thing. Like
a picture on her coffin.
You know, yeah. Which is so extreme and morbid to think of it like that.
Yeah.
But is what you're doing online
mm-hmm.
what you want to be remembered by, and what like is it actually telling the story of who you are?
Yeah. All right, well, before we finish up, because we're running out of time,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to get your advice. So what advice would you give someone trying to start out a career as a journalist, be it in Ireland
mm-hmm.
or in the US?
I think ultimately think outside the box and always be very curious and innovative when it comes to what you think are stories.
Because
mm-hmm. there's obviously a lot of journalists and there's a lot of writers, and like you don't need to be a journalist to ever be a writer, but it is about like questioning things and framing that as a story. So I think just like really being aware that a lot of things are a story.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one to start off with, especially as a freelancer.
Yeah.
Because you need to be able to kind of anticipate trends and you need to be able to anticipate, like, quote unquote, the next big thing and stuff. I think, as we were just saying, like, only put so much of your value in what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, know that you're more than, like, who you're writing for. Because that's a very kind of dangerous path to go on. Because, you know, you can pitch to the big publications all you want and they might never get back to you. But just know that as long as you're like happy with the work that you're producing, it will ultimately get you to where you want to be. I also heard this really good quote recently and I've like taken it on board a lot, that always question whether you'd do something if no one knew you were doing it. I think that's a really good
one.
Yeah, I think it's a really good piece of advice, and especially when we can put so much focus on like sharing what we're doing and telling everyone what we're doing on social media, and that's great, and it's a great way if you are abroad to keep up with people at home. But you know, is what you're doing what you want to do for you and
mm-hmm.
not what people will think of you.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
You can use it. Because I didn't come up with it.
You did. Okay.
Someone told me and I was like, write that down. It's so good.
Yeah, it is. When you,
you know,
really just think about it, like you stop in your tracks and you become more self-aware thinking about like what you're actually doing, your motivations behind it.
For sure. And I think, as I was saying earlier about like interviews and stuff here and 3-4 part interviews and edit tests and stuff. Like, don't put all of your worth in what could be your title.
Okay.
Because you don't, you, like, everything is fickle.
Yeah.
And if it's gone in the morning, just always have a body of work that you're proud of.
Yeah.
Because you just, you don't know how the industry is going to go. Like, it's so changeable, it's so volatile, as are most industries. But I think if you always just think, you know, this is me and this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm putting out there, and people can like it or people can not like it, but just be solid and set on what you're doing, and it will stand to you. And, like, you definitely do have to be very malleable and be able to kind of weather the change of media, because it is changing, and you have to be able to kind of anticipate and keep up with that. Also have, for people coming here, like, have realistic expectations.
Yeah.
You know, as I said, a year is such a limited time to become who you think you should be when you go to New York. Also, what else?
Well, that, you saying your year in New York, so that leads me on to the last question, which is, quick fire round of that was the wrong word, but, like, three ways to describe, three pieces of advice in one sentence is to describe, like, one, like, moving to New York.
Okay.
Like, I don't, that came out, like, I don't know what that was, but you know what I mean.
I get it. Yeah. Definitely going back to that, manage your expectations. Always remember, there's no such thing as an overnight success. Be wary of what you see on social media, because it's likely not going to be your reality.
Yes.
And just be, I think, really, really open. And if you come to New York and things don't go the way you want, but you only wanted to come for a year, like, just soak it all up.
Yeah.
And if it didn't further your career, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it will further you in a lot of other ways.
Personal ways.
Definitely. You will never have an experience like your first year in New York. I will never have an experience like my first year in New York. You're exposed to so much. And that, for writers in particular, like, that enriches your writing. There's just so much to take from the city, and don't put all of it into, like, your career and what you should be doing and what you wish you could tell your parents you were doing, or what you could wish you could share on your Instagram. Like, just focus on your own like, personal, you know, journey, and that might be to do with your career, but it might not, and it's okay if it's not to do with your career.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
It's so refreshing to, like, listen to, like, a girl, like, who's just, like, hustled, just really really hustled, and just hear your story.
Thank
I think a lot of, hopefully, girls and men listening will be able to get something out of it and kind of learn the
the ropes. And lastly, just reach out to every editor and, like, butter them up a little bit, but that's how you get...
Use the Irish charm.
Yeah, like, that's how you just, you know, be genuine in a lot of ways and say, I read the story that you just did and I loved it, and ask for informational interviews as well. Like, that's how I've got stuff with Cosmo and, like, Elle coming out soon.
Yeah.
Just, like, ask the editors to meet you for 30 minutes. And, like, they're people. They will. They were in your position.
Okay. So last question. What's your Instagram handle?
Oh, it's... So it's at Freya Dro, and I have now realized that some people think my name is Freya Dro.
Oh, Freya Dro.
Yeah. Because sometimes I get people reaching out and being like, Hi. Freya Dro, I just wanted to ask you this thing. Yeah, it's at Freya Dro.
Freya Dro.
My last name is
Dro. We'll get it. A plug in there. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.